Against the wall, I shouted to the residents, "Get the heck out of this building!" The nearest man in pajamas rubbed his eyes and stared at me.
"Is there a fire or something?"
"Or something.
What's the gun for?"
"Shooting things, including you, if you don't get a move on." I gestured toward the stairwell. "You guys have a fire drill procedure?" Smoothing the small amount of hair he had on his head, he nodded,
"Yeah, I guess."
"Then follow it and get out of here."
He harumphed. "This used to be a nice place to live."
I studied all the residents, but didn't see Magic Mike in the crowd. Shouting to be heard above the din, I addressed the entire hallway. "We've got an emergency and the elevator isn't operating, so if you would, please use the stairwell and evacuate the building." Moving as fast as they could, which in actuality wasn't that fast, they grumbled, but followed orders, decades-old military training kicking in. Fortunately, this wing wasn't as crowded as some of the others, and I was just as glad to be in there, all but alone. Urso's door still hung open exactly as it had when I'd first seen it, and I moved forward, my weapon leading the way. The door was undamaged, and the safety chain, gently tapping at the wood as I edged the door open, hung from the frame. The room looked as it had a few days ago. Even the turntable continued to spin, skipping on Grace Slick, singing the lyric, "Feed Your Head," over and over again. The lights had been left on, and a still-steaming mug sat on a side table. "Mike?" I immediately felt foolish, calling out to a deaf mute. Never mind that even if he could hear anything, he wouldn't have with all the noise from the emergency alarm. Moving farther in, I could see that the only other part of the room past the hole in the wall was through a beaded curtain where there was a kitchenette in what must have at one time been a walk-in closet. There wasn't anywhere to hide, especially for someone as flamboyant as Magic Mike. Starting back for the door, I felt a slight breeze and looked over to see that a speaker had fallen out of the decal-covered window and was lying flat-faced on the balcony outside, the sound vibrating against the tarred surface. I lifted the needle from the Jefferson Airplane's White Rabbit. "Take a break, Grace." Carefully easing my head out the window, I looked both ways to make sure the entire balcony was empty, then climbed out and glanced down at the parking area where a crowd was assembling and Vic was escorting the gurney to a waiting ambulance. I thought about calling down to her, but her hearing me over the klaxon alarm and all the people was slim. There was a metal ladder attached to the side of the building, so I moved that way, placed a foot on a rung, and hauled myself to the top roof. The entire surface was pale from some kind of weatherproofing and glowed in the moonlight like a vertical gold-plated trampoline. I was relieved to see railings at the ends of the overhangs and that there looked to be a walkway leading to the higher level above the balcony. At least, if I fell from there, I'd only land a third of the way to the pavement. There was a noise to my right beyond the top of the roof. I carefully climbed up and peeked over, but still couldn't see anyone. The roof dropped off on my right and stretched toward the older buildings and an area that used to be the parade ground. There was a noise again, as if someone were crying out. Straddling the peak, I crab-walked to the right and was faced with another downslope that went the remainder of the old building before dropping off to a flat roof that ran the expanse of the rest of the structure, including a narrow part that led to another building to the west, near what looked like a garage and the historical buildings. I felt like some bighorn Batman as I stood there listening, but there were no more noises. Figuring there really wasn't anywhere else to go, I took a step, not one of my best decisions, and watched as my boot slipped out from under me, and I sprawled to the left before toppling over the edge. I slid headfirst on my back, but stretched out my arms and legs in hopes of getting enough traction on the weatherproofing so that I wouldn't slip over the eaves onto the secondary roof below. The ploy worked, but now I was spread-eagled about halfway down the slope, a tenuous thread of friction holding me in place for the moment. Well, hell. I stayed like that, looking at the next drop, before edging down about 4 inches, this time not coming to a complete stop, but instead continuing to slide at about 10 inches an hour. Damn. Placing the back of my hand on the surface of the material, I slowed and squelched to a stop. Having fun? With a heightened level of East Coast sarcasm, I didn't have to look to tell who was addressing me. This is an interesting perspective. Thanks. I raised my head ever so slowly and felt my hat slip off and slide away. I could see Vic standing at the peak of the roof with her Glock hanging at her side as she considered the material that covered the surface and subsequently my situation.
This shit is slick.
Trying not to move, I called back, "Yep." She glanced around.
Why the hell would you use this stuff on a roof?
Believe it or not, I was just asking myself the same question. I saw you climbing the ladder outside the balcony to Magic Mike's room and figured you must be up here somewhere. You don't happen to have a rope or tow strap on you, do you?
No. Of course, if I had my new truck, I'd have plenty of room.
Shut up about the new truck, will you?
My, aren't we cranky?
I very slowly started to move, but felt a tiny squelch and began sliding again. Any idea how far I'm about to fall?
Maybe about 12 feet down to the next level. I'd try and get turned around, backward. Head-first landings don't usually end well.
As I tried to turn, I gained a little speed. Thanks for the help.
No problem.
I'd gotten about halfway around when I reached the edge and tumbled off, grabbing at the gutter with one hand. I watched as it jerked itself loose from the eaves, the 10-inch nails pulling from the old wood like stitches being ripped from a hem. Well, hell! Still holding onto the gutter, which in no way was designed to hold my weight, I landed on my feet, sort of. One ankle gave way, and I rolled on it, causing me to fall down a set of 3 steps that led to a doorway before landing on my back and staring up at the sky and at Vic, who was backlit by the outrageous stars, or maybe those were the ones in my head.
You all right?
Taking a moment to catch my breath, I exhaled until I was sure my lungs were going to collapse before breathing in like a bellows and then coughing out the words, "Great, really wonderful, thanks."
I think I'm going to try another way.
Releasing the gutter and struggling up, I coughed some more. I can't say that I blame you. Did you get a look at whoever we're supposedly chasing? Rolling onto my knees, I stood rather slowly, discovering that my right ankle didn't really like me anymore. No, but I'm pretty sure it's somebody that's got Magic Mike because he knows where the painting is.
Why would they be on the roof?
Because we broke up whatever they were doing and they crawled out the window to get away.
So you don't think the painting is there?
I picked up my hat and took a step, finding that my ankle, though unhappy with me, would carry some weight. No. I'm headed back down. I'll circle around and meet you at the west end of the building, since if they're up here, that's where they're headed. You know, I'm starting to think this manhunt crap is highly overrated. Waving a hand at her in dismissal, I limped forward. I'll drive them your way. She disappeared, and I started off toward a structure that housed the elevator, the shaft having a skylight at the top. There was a large cottonwood to my left that blocked off the view of the building in that direction, but I figured I'd be able to see a good deal once I got to it. It took forever to get there on my weak ankle. There were no other lower roofs that I could access, so I suppose I was going to have to look for hatches or stairwells that led down. There was a door leading into the shaft with the skylight, but it was locked. So unless the assailant had a key, this was a no-go. Glancing around some more, I could see another roof over what must have been an entryway for the building to my left. Limping off in that direction, I could have sworn I heard more noises and picked up the pace as best I could. By the time I got there, I could definitely hear voices below me. I stepped to the edge and yelled down, figuring my voice would cover ground faster than I could. "Absaroka County Sheriff's Department, halt!" There were more noises, but they weren't sticking around. I said halt! Predictably, there was nothing. Grumbling, I limped over the edge and looked down at about a 6-foot drop to the next roof. Sighing, I holstered my Colt and sat. Then, rolling onto my stomach, I draped my legs over the precipice and edged down. I dropped, trying to keep my weight on my good ankle. It worked, and I stood there, finally looking at the ground, which I figured was about 10 feet down. Who the hell was I chasing, the flying Willendas? One of the limbs from the cottonwood stuck out past the corner of the entryway roof, so I limped over there, reached out, and tested the weight. It was sturdy, and if it held me, it would be easy enough to climb down on the other limb and gently lower my damaged ankle to the sidewalk. Grabbing hold, I swung out and got my boots on the next one down, edging closer to the trunk and then lowering myself to another branch and then another until I was on the lowest one, which was 5 feet or so above the ground. Again, I tried to get my weight on my left ankle, but the dirt was uneven, and my right hit first.
I crumpled and just lay there trying not to yell. Finally sitting up, I carefully stood and started limping toward the corner of the building where the noises had last come from and where the sidewalk ended. There was another building and a parking lot across the street, and I was about to turn the corner when somebody came from the other side, and I pressed my .45 into his face. "Jesus!" Pulling back, I realized it was just one of the watchmen. "What's your name?"
"Gene Weller, it's me, Gene Weller, Sheriff."
Lowering my weapon, I looked past him. "Hi, Gene. How are you?" He sputtered some words out like a teapot about to boil over.
"Other than just now, I'm doing pretty well. What the hell is going on?"
"I'm after somebody.
I'd offer to help, but I think I just shit my pants."
Moving past him, I started limping in the direction of the parade ground. "If you see my undersheriff, would you tell her you saw me heading this way?"
"Will do. Is there anything else?"
"Tell her I'm in pursuit, and I need all the backup I can get." He nodded, and I continued off past the line of cars. It was possible that they were thinking of stealing a car since I'd taken the keys to the one they'd stolen to get here. Limping across a manicured lawn, I looked to my right and could see what I thought was two individuals darting behind one of the historic buildings. It was one of those out-of-the-corner-of-your-eye things, and I wasn't even sure that I'd seen what I thought I had, but it was something. Holding the Colt aimed at the stars, I made a solemn promise to not shoot anybody just because they didn't want to chase them anymore, at least for now. I figured the distance would be about 50 yards and just hoped I would make it before my ankle called it quits. The pavement ended about two buildings before the parade ground to my right, where there was a barn that seemed to have been converted into a garage or workshop. There were old vehicles and large equipment, but the building that interested me was the one to the left. The chicken coop. The historic chicken coop. The only chicken coop on the National Register of Historic Places. Magic Mike had invited us there, and Carol had pointed it out a couple of times. Hell, it was the most notable location in the entire fort, and it sounded as though somebody was tearing down the place. There was also noise from behind me, and all I could hope was that it was Vic. There was a crash up ahead, and I lodged myself against the white clapboard building at the corner, where I could see the wire net door hanging open and movement inside the coop, along with hearing more crashing and thumping. I loped as best I could across the space between the buildings, only to trip over the bracing at the bottom of the doorway and crash onto the floor of the coop. Fortunately, I landed on something. Unfortunately, it was Magic Mike. Rolling to one side, I swung the .45 up and around the room, only to find the rest of the place empty. I could see a massive PVC pipe that half hung from the rafters and recognized it as part of the irrigation system. The plumber's tape that had been used to suspend it had been pulled down, and it looked like the pipe's end cap had been pried off as the thing hung there, still swinging. Pushing off the ground, I lodged the Colt into my holster and reached down. Pulling Bursaw's hairy head from the mossy, herb-filled ground, I was relieved to see his eyelids flutter and watched as he breathed. Then, grabbing the front of my jacket, he attempted to speak. Snatching my maglite from my belt, I shined the beam on my face so he could see what I was saying. "Are you all right?" Fuming with frustration, he nodded. I gestured toward the large plastic tube above us. "It's the painting. They've got the painting, right?" He nodded again and began to sign. I shook my head as I pulled him toward the interior wall. When I propped him up, I could see the blood on the side of his face where he'd obviously been struck. "Hush, and don't worry about it. I'll catch them. Trust me." He nodded and looked up at me very seriously, finally lifting his hand like a child and imitating a pistol. "Armed?" He nodded again, finally smiling, blood in his teeth. Pulling out my .45, I smiled back. "Aren't we all?" His smile quickly faded as I started to go, and he held out a hand. Lowering the flashlight, I paused at the door and looked down the slope that led toward the creekside trail that meandered toward the mountains. "It's okay. I know who it is." Chapter 16. It was dark under the canopy of trees that hung over the banks of Clear Creek, and even with the sporadic light cast by the moon, it was like looking through a jigsaw puzzle, albeit one that could kill you. My ankle was about to capsize me, and I felt like I was pogoing on a raggedly nerved stump. The trail was wide, with pea gravel the size of, well, peas, and smooth as a parking lot. It helped, but not much, as I crunched my way along, wondering what anybody thought they could do from here. It was possible that they had an accomplice up ahead,
but I doubted it. This whole enterprise stank to the high heaven of desperation. So the painting had been hidden in the fake irrigation system of the historic chicken coop after being liberated from Charlie Lee's apartment, or maybe even before that. Either way, I was going to have to ask Magic Mike. There was a bend in the trail, and I couldn't help but stop for a moment to catch my breath, even though, for all I knew, my assailant was standing a dozen feet away and aiming at my head. They knew I was coming, and could have easily taken me by surprise already, but I had a feeling they were running scared, so I had to kick it into gear and get moving, which I did. The trail led up the canyon and into the mountains, but there were a few pull-offs beside the walkway where the gap got narrower, and someone could be waiting up there with a vehicle, but then the only other option was back into town. The same was true of the trail, and I turned back toward town, wondering if I was headed in the wrong direction. I stood there for a minute, thinking about the odds and what would be the logical choice, but then there was the hunch. I couldn't help but think that if it was who I thought it was, that they had headed out of town. With all the ruckus at the Soldiers and Sailors' Home, I was pretty sure that they had chosen the other direction. It was a hunch, but I'd followed hunches my whole life, and so far they hadn't done me too much wrong. I started off. While walking, the thought occurred to me that the perpetrator might have hidden the painting somewhere out here. I just wasn't sure if anybody would leave $24 million under a bush. I was hobbling around another bend when I could have sworn I heard someone talking up ahead. Stopping at the center of the trail, about 100 feet short of a bridge with a pipe rail fence, I listened. There was definitely someone talking, but with the noise of the stream and the echo from the canyon walls, it was difficult to tell what direction the voice was coming from. I limped forward and was pretty sure it was coming from up ahead, but it was a long, straight stretch and I couldn't actually see anyone. The voice was steady, the tone the kind people used while speaking on a cell phone. I looked around, wondering how they had gotten service, and slowed, peering into the darkness of the sheltered path at the bridge buttress. I fought the urge to call out and identify myself, but even as sure as I was about whom I was chasing, I was still unsure as to how desperate they might be, and figured I might be rewarded with a bullet. The voice stopped, and so did I. It was possible that they'd heard me crunching along on the gravel, and if they were at the side of the trail near the creek, where the shadows were deeper, there was the chance that I'd walk right past them, so I did what all good hunters do. I waited. I waited until I couldn't stand it anymore, and then I waited some more until I heard the amplified sound of crickets, much louder than actual living crickets might make. "I know you're here." Nothing. "I heard your phone." Nothing. "There's nowhere to go." Nothing. "Trust me, I know this trail like the back of my hand, maybe better." Nothing. To be honest, I haven't studied the back of my hand in a while. "Oh, for God's sake, shut up." I smiled. "Expecting a call? Maybe." I moved forward, zeroing in on the voice near the bridge. "You're armed?"
"Yes."
"Me too." There was a pause.
"So, how are we going to do this?"
"I don't want to shoot you."
"I don't want to shoot you either."
"You didn't let me finish." "I don't. But I will." And let that one sink in.
"I don't think you'll shoot me, even for a $26 million painting."
"24.
The price is going up."
"Don't count on it. You're a killer, and I'm not likely to forget that." Aiming into a dark copse of conifers by the buttress, I breathed in their scent, along with an expensive cologne. "You killed Charlie Lee."
"Did I?"
"I'm assuming by bribing the security guy, Gene Weller, who probably didn't know what you were up to."
"What was I up to?"
"Injecting Charlie Lee with succinylmethonium chloride."
"Prove it."
"I have. The elements of the drug are only traceable in a urine sample taken from a living subject. Unfortunately for you, Charlie Lee used the bathroom but then forgot to flush, instead stacking his books on the seat." I stepped closer. "And when Gene Weller finds out this concerns a murder, he'll flip on you like a busy bee pancake." I took another step. "Why kill Serge?
He was a pig."
I continued to move forward, even though I was pretty sure he was aiming right at me. "Not a good enough reason." Silence.
"He was making a mess, and it was only a question of time before he began talking."
"Still not good enough."
"The painting was paid for."
"Not by you." Conrad Weston stepped sideways. An oversized rolled canvas under one arm,
and a Sig Sauer P-329mm pointed at me in his other hand. "Might as well be. How's my partner?" "Loaded into an ambulance and headed for the hospital." The young man smirked. "I hope he makes it." "No hard feelings?" "He made me what I am."
"A murderer?"
He barked a laugh. "A self-made man." "You took the artist proof at the Buffalo Bill." "I had to. You were getting too close." I moved forward, hoping to cut him off. "And you started out replicating Russian paintings for von Lehmann?" He nodded, countering my movements, keeping a little ahead of me with the Sig still carefully aimed at my middle. "It was a start, but then I got introduced to a richer clientele. Kova Puskov, among others." "He's coming back for his painting." "Maybe." Conrad shrugged. "The thing is getting heavy." "I'm afraid I can't allow that." His phone began chirping again. "By the time you have any say, I'll be in Helsinki, Berlin, Paris, or some other place, leading a whole new life." The phone continued chirping. "You want to answer that?" "It can wait. I've got time." I gave a slight gesture with my .45 Colt. "You're forgetting something." "Not really. But you are." He smiled confidently. "Too confidently." "That or you never knew." The first blow was a pretty good one, causing me to stagger forward and almost drop my weapon. The second one from behind forced me to my knees. I tried to clear my head with a shake, but that only made things worse as a vertigo and nausea rose in the back of my throat. Weston's foot kicked my sidearm from my line of sight as I tried to push myself up, the final blow from behind sinking me flat on my chest as I lay there. She spoke, breathless from the exertion of clubbing me like a baby seal. "Is he dead?" "I don't think so. Where the hell have you been?" I could see her boots as she walked closer to him. "I have to get my car. Where's Philippe?" "There's been a slight change in plan." He scuffed some gravel toward me. "One of them shot him in the foot." "Where is he?" "They got him. Look, it's me and you now." "Conrad, this is crazy." "Where's the car?" "Up ahead, at one of the turnouts." "Are the keys in it?" "Yes." I reached out and firmly grabbed an ankle. "What the hell?" Katrina Dijon tried to kick at me, but even as hurt as I was, I held fast, started to stand, and reached up to grab her by the back of her jacket. She swung what looked like a tire iron at me again, but I got my other arm up to block it and crushed her against me, facing him. I stripped the bar from her hand and flung it at him. My aim was maybe not the best, but he fell backward into the railing as the metal hit his hand, and he dropped the P-320, which fell halfway between us, the bar falling onto his foot. He stood there, hopping and thinking about going for the Sig, but I was too close. He clutched his wrist, and the painting fell. I tried to focus, but my head was killing me, and I could feel the blood spreading down the side of my face. "Hurts, doesn't it?" He looked at the 9mm again. "Don't. Don't even try." He stared at me for a moment and then nodded, stooped to pick up the painting instead, and backed away on the concrete surface of the bridge. "Fair enough." Katrina struggled and then stared at him. "What the hell do you mean, fair enough?" He shrugged. "Honey, there's nothing I can do." She struggled some more, stomping on my foot and throwing her head back into my chest, but I held her fast. "You rat bastard, help me." "Darling, I would, but he's too big, and I can't get to that gun without him getting hold of me." He continued backing away in a limp, cradling the canvas with two hands. "You said the keys are in the car?" She screamed. "You son of a bitch!" I shook my head, still trying to clear my vision. "You're not going to make it." "No joke. I think you broke my wrist, not to mention my foot." He backed away. "Well, I guess I've got to give it a shot, huh?" I tried moving forward with her, but there was no way I was going to catch him wounded as I was and burdened with a hostage. "Look, Weston," he laughed, "there's nowhere to go." "See you around, Sheriff," she screamed again. "Conrad!" "Love you, babe," he gestured toward her hand. "You can keep the ring." "You bastard!" He turned and limped across the bridge toward the mountains as we stood there, her struggling against my grip as I studied the railing. Reaching behind me, I pulled my cuffs from my belt and snapped one over her wrist before pushing her toward one of the pipe rails. She struggled some more, but sensed there wasn't any way she was going to stop me as I flipped the cuff over the steel railing. Stepping to the side, I dodged as she kicked at me, still glancing around for my sidearm, but to no avail. "Let me go, you bastard!" Taking a deep breath, I started off, but had to catch myself on the other railing, almost toppling over it and falling into Clear Creek. "Let me go, and I'll go get him." Holding on to the railing for support, I walked back and picked up the Sig Sauer he'd abandoned, glanced at her, and then started off at a very uneven pace. "You'll never catch him, you idiot!"
I grimaced back at her. Well, I guess I've got to give it a shot, huh? She screeched some more, but for the life of me, I couldn't really hear her through the ringing in my ears. The tire iron whizzed by me, striking the ground ahead. I knew I'd forgotten something. Trudging forward, I picked up the pace, ignoring the pain in my ankle and the increasing one that ran through my head like a camp axe. I mumbled to myself, I should have shot the little bastard. I tried to keep my balance, but I was wavering, and I knew it. I went around the next bend into another straightaway, and I could see him up ahead, impaired, but moving a lot better than I was. I raised a 9mm and held it on him, but figured no, not until there weren't any other options. Instead, I fired the semi-automatic into the air, in the hopes that someone might hear it and find us. The report bounced off the canyon walls, and I had to admit it would be hard to tell where the shot had originated. Stuffing the SIG into my jacket pocket, I started off again, but it was harder to get going this time, the heels of my boots digging into the fine gravel. I tried to keep moving, but the sound in my head had become a high-pitched whine. When I shook it, I drifted to the side of the trail and almost fell over. I took a couple of deep breaths and started off again. Stretching my jaw, I thought about how many times I'd been hit in the head, but took assurance that it was my hardest part. Or so everybody told me. Reaching up, I felt above my ear and ascertained that, yes, I was bleeding and at a pretty good rate. Nudging my fingers against the flap of skin and hair, I pushed it up and held it as I walked. Usually, I occupied